You're listening to Paranormal Portal on Revolver Podcasts. Everybody, welcome to the Paranormal Portal podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful night, and thank you so much for tuning in and supporting all that we're doing here on the podcast. It's been amazing. You guys have been amazing out there checking us out and subscribing and downloading, and it's just a real pleasure. Of course, I'm your host, Brent Thomas. This is the Paranormal Portal podcast, and once again, special thanks to Revolver Podcast for making all this possible. I'm your host, Brent Thomas. Good to see you. Great to see you. That was good to see you. I combined good and great. I don't know. I make up my own language sometimes. All right, let's get to this and see what we can find out. This is West Virginia is our first story tonight. And it says, it was a cool night in July in West Virginia. Two of my nieces and I were looking for something to do, and one of the girls asked to go out and stir up a ghost. I don't know how you stir up a ghost, but it doesn't sound like a good thing to do. I'm just saying. But let's see what happened. It was around 9 p.m. and we drove around for a bit and ended up in Logan County. And after reading a website concerning the brutal murder of Mamie? M-A-M-I-E. Thurman. Mamie. I thought it was that Marnie or Mamie? It's M-A-M-I-E. Mamie Thurman. It has been more than 60 years since the murder, which occurred in Logan County on June 22, 1932. Legend has it that her body was dumped in the woods along 22 Mines Mountain Road. So, lo and behold, that's where we, my nieces and I, drove to. Nothing spells family fun like looking for a ghost of a woman who was brutally murdered and her body was dumped. Maybe just do crafts or, you know, color pictures or something. But anyway, to each his own. But so that's where they drove to. We had two digital cameras with us. And while Tina drove, Marcia and I clicked our cameras at random. And for the most part, all we could see on the small screens of our digitals were orbs, distorted pictures, and the glare of headlights. When we returned home and uploaded all the pictures onto my computer, Marcia had turned around and snapped about four pictures in the back windshield of the SUV as we were driving. The back window was heavily tinted. In all but one of the pictures, the only thing you could see was a black window. And in one of them, there were many orbs of all different sizes. In the midst of the orbs, you could see a very clear picture of a dark-haired woman dressed in a black coat or cloak. When I uploaded the pictures from the digital camera, I captured many orbs, One of the pictures turned out very distorted, all except the lower right-hand corner, where it was very plain to see a woman dressed in a black cloak, long cape, sitting on the ground, leaning up against a tree with her head bowed and her arms crossed. Up to this point, I was a skeptic, but now I do believe that when a person is murdered or passed before its time, that their spirit lingers on earth. There was an update to this. It says, hi, if you look to the lower right, you can see a woman sitting there leaning against a tree in the second picture I am sending was taken by my niece with a different digital camera, and the window of the SUVs was heavily, we were riding, it was heavily tinted. Look past both the orbs to the right, and you can see a woman in a black cloak. The vehicle was on the move when both pictures were taken, and both pictures were taken about the same time. It was about midnight on July 21st, 2007, on 22 Holden Road in Logan County. Thank you for your interest in my story. That was that one. So let's get to the next one. And this is coming out of Arizona tonight. And this one's quite a bit longer. So let's see. This one has to do with perhaps a family member. So again, it starts off with all the fluffy stuff. Okay. This is one of my own experiences. This was some time ago, 1994 to be exact. And it all started when my brother was murdered. He was bound and tied and shot and then thrown on the side of the road. I try to think that my experience was in some way related, and I at least wanted to believe that. And sometime before his death, my mom and myself and my brother all planned to move in together. And my mom had me at 15 and my brother at 16, so my brother and I were very close all of our lives, and it was always him and I. Well, that year, my mom divorced her second husband, and we were thinking that it would be nice if we all moved in together as adults. On September 14th, 1994, we got approved for a beautiful condo. My mom and I worked at the same place at the time, so we knew first since she called and I was there with her. We were so excited to go home and tell my brother, and once I got to the house, there were two detectives waiting for us at the door with their suits on and badges, and they didn't look like they had good news. Once we got inside the house, they asked us to please have a seat, and, you know, when they ask you to sit, there's no good news. That is when they told us they discovered my brother's body on the side of the road, tied and bound hands and feet. Of course, my first question was, how do you know it was him? And they said fingerprints from a time when he was 13 and took some kid's lunch money. They arrested him to teach him a lesson. You could imagine the loss and pain we felt. He was 19 and I was 21. To make a long story short, my mom and I had to arrange the funeral, got past that, and then next question was to decide if we should still move into the home as we planned, and we thought he would have wanted us to, so we did. My mom and me, and at that time, my two kids. So about 2 weeks later, I was downstairs doing laundry, my usual chore on Sunday night, getting laundry ready for the Monday morning. I was tired and decided to leave the laundry on the couch and folded that last blouse, mine, long sleeve floral print, and laid it on top of the pile, and I went upstairs to bed. And the next morning, I went downstairs to pick some clothes to wear, and I saw that floral blouse on top as I left it and reached in the middle of the pile and grabbed another. And might I mention that this was my mom's birthday that day, and she had been so sad, and no need to explain why. I got dressed, and my plan was to go in early to work so I can get out early to have a special evening with flowers, balloons, and the whole nine yards. Just her and my kids. So she had already left that morning earlier than I had. I did get out early that day and came home before her and put the flowers down on the dining room table and went upstairs to change, and I went to my room and I saw that there was a blouse laid on my bed. Now my bed, I always make it before I leave in the morning. This blouse, the one I mentioned earlier, the floral print long-sleeved one, was laid out as if ready for someone to wear. Laid out like a cross, which was weird to me. Arms of the blouse extended out like it had just been ironed. Okay, I thought. I know I didn't put it here, and I had seen it that morning, so I know it was downstairs on the couch, and at this point I figured, well, maybe my mom had come home early and wanted to wear it and changed her mind, and I figured she would be home later, never even thinking about it, and went on to my usual business. My mom came home on a regular time and did the whole surprise thing, and she was happy that I did that for her, and as we started getting plates ready to serve dinner, I asked her, Mom, when you came home today, you didn't decide to wear my blouse, did you? And she was like, what are you talking about, Mia? And she said she worked the whole day and hadn't left early. And then I was then so freaked out, only because there is no way I put that blouse there laid out like that. And I told her, and we were both freaked out because she knows I'm not nuts, and I certainly wouldn't lie. She did say, though, maybe you put it there and changed your mind. And I said, no, Mom. I knew what I wanted to wear that day, and that blouse was not it. To this day, that scares me, but in a way, I would like to think it was my brother trying to communicate somehow. It creeps me out to imagine that blouse floating in midair from downstairs to my room, upstairs, or however it made its way up there. But believe you me, it was not done by me, my mom, or my kids, who at the time were at their dad's house. I know it sounds weird, but hey, I can't explain it, even today. I just can't. I wouldn't think it was my brother. I wouldn't think if it was my brother, he would have chosen another way to be noticed. And that was odd to me. But then I'm not a ghost or a spirit, so I wouldn't know. I like to think it was him, at least. And I apologize for the length of the story, but it would not have made any sense unless I gave the detail, and I hope it gets posted. Thanks for reading. Huh. Well, that's cool. You know, again, those kind of things are pretty tough. Wonder how I made it to this far. Huh. That's strange. Okay. I don't know. I suppose they do, you know, and we just talked about this last night. The people we love, when they pass, maybe they do come back. Maybe they do show us things. Maybe they do make these little obvious things happen just so we know. And very cool if that's the case, if that really is those that we love that passed and have made that journey. It's really neat that they can still let us know, like, hey, everything's cool. I'm here. This is me showing you. The next one's coming from Alaska. And, it has to do with Ouija board or something, or a seance. So, should be spooky. I realize that people here would think I'm probably nuts, but I swear on my immortal soul that this happened. I decided that communication was the only solution to my problem with the shadow people, so 2 nights ago I began to make contact. Last night I finally got a response, and even I couldn't believe it was happening, even though I was sitting there hearing it. Last night I went into my room with a flashlight, and what I admit was false courage, and it was 11 at night, and I know for sure because I took notes in a notebook to track time and any responses I may have gotten. Unfortunately, I don't have a digital recorder or camera that may have caught some of the responses, just what I wrote in the notebook. I sat on my bed and opened the notebook, pencil at the ready, with my flashlight tucked in tight to my side, and I kept the light off and the door closed to shut off any outside influences. I posed a general inquiry of, is there any entity present? Please make yourselves known. I waited and got nothing. I tried time and again, asking things like, if someone is here, could you please make a noise so that I know you are here? Can you manifest so I can see you? Why are you here? Things like that. As time went on, I came up with nothing. I began feeling like, well, foolish. I made the move to get off my bed and turn on the light when a loud crackle came from somewhere at the end of my bed. I quickly looked at the clock and jotted down the time by then. By then it was 12:37 a.m. and I sat and waited for the sound to come again. And when it did, I tried to pinpoint its source and found that it was coming from the speakers of my stereo. which sits on the shelf directly at the foot of my bed, and I went over with my flashlight and checked the wires to see if it could be the cause, and saw nothing wrong with them, and made the decision that, I believe, gives this whole experience credence. I unplugged the stereo. I went back to my bed and did a quick scan of the room before turning the flashlight off. I put the pencil back against the paper and asked again, is there anyone in this room with me? The speakers crackled again, and I tried not to panic. I knew for a fact that I'd just unplugged all the wires of the stereo, and there's no reason for it to make that sound. Just to be sure, I checked with the flashlight, confirming what I already knew. It was still unplugged. There was no power being fed into it. I asked, could you maybe use the speakers to communicate with me? Then there was another very loud crackle, and I thought I heard a voice in the static, and I picked up my pencil and asked, what? Could you repeat that? Another crackle. And then I took to marking them as responses in the notebook. This went on for a while as I asked again and again who was there and why, and after some time I made a mark of the time, and at that point it was 2:12 a.m. Finally, I swore I heard a voice in one of the crackles, and I leaned closer to the speakers, and I asked in a clear voice directly into the speaker, why are you here? The crackle I got in response was quieter, kind of like when you tune a radio and the static goes down, allowing you to hear bits and pieces of a station, and I swear I heard the word stay. I wrote the word down and asked, what do you mean, stay? Another crackle. And then I heard, or thought I heard, never leave. I don't really remember firsthand what came after that, but according to the notebook, this conversation ensued. Do you mean that you don't ever want to leave? Or me to leave? No. Do you mean that you don't ever want to leave? Static. Do you wish to remain here in this room? Yes. Stay. Why do you wish to stay? Static. Have you always been here? Static. Are you still here in this room with me? And then I noted that there was a loud, high noise that came out of the speakers, and I made a note that it sounded vaguely like a scream. Then a click came out of the speakers, and like when someone hangs up a phone. I don't know what this means or what to do now. Whatever happened, I don't remember most of it. If it weren't for the notebook, I wouldn't have any idea what happened. Could it be that I actually made contact, or is this simply my subconscious putting on a show for me? I can't tell, and would greatly appreciate any input if you have any. Thanks. Yeah, that's pretty profound. Especially without the power. So, you know, if you're familiar with electronic devices, of course, you know that capacitors can hold a charge and, you know, even unplugged things can make noise for a while. But this is happening over a period of hours, and I don't know that there's a battery backup to it or not. I don't know. But if there is, then, you know, maybe it's just some weirdness with the stereo. But what if it's real? What if that is the way that they chose to communicate with him, or it chose to communicate with him? I don't know. Pretty powerful. Could very well be, because, again, electronic devices don't seem to be much of a struggle for them to manipulate. The next one is coming out of Virginia. This story is really short, and this stuff hasn't happened to me, but to my mom. She doesn't think anything of it, but my stomach flips whenever I think of it. It doesn't help that I'm home alone right now, either. Yippee, I've lived here all my life, 12 years, 12-year-old, and in this hopefully normal house. About 4 or 5 years ago, my dad's mom moved in with us, very sick, and we made a bedroom out of the front room, and that is where she passed away. Her ashes are still in that room. All her life, she was a prankster. Even after her death, it started out with little things. The first was moving the toothpaste, the slamming doors, pushing my dog into the pool. She disliked this dumb but sweet dog. And then for about a year and a half, she stopped. But now she started again, and I have no clue what's triggered this, but I really want to talk to her. If you have any advice for this, please comment. Now scarier things have been happening. About 2 months ago, one night at about 3 a.m., my mother awoke to the sound of the shower going full blast. She checked on us kids to see if we were in the shower, but we were all asleep. Then she opened the door and the shower was still on full blast. But when she looked in, the shower nozzle was just dripping. My mom has a brave soul. Then last night, my mom woke up at about 2 a.m., the sound of fake, the fake kind, like from old horror movies, from my brother's room. My brother was just at a party that night, and it didn't seem like me. Then she opened the door, and no one was there. That's creepy. it's nothing really, really over the top. And it does like sound like someone just being a smart aleck, but the woo-woo ghost thing is kind of humorous. I mean, I suppose if it was happening to me, at 2 a.m, it might be a lot less funny, but sitting here reading, it sounds pretty humorous. Okay, everybody, I think it's time we got to take a break, so don't go away and we'll be right back with more of the Paranormal Portal podcast in just a couple minutes. Hey guys, Brent Thomas here of the Paranormal Portal Podcast. We just wanted to take a moment to introduce you to the Paranormal Portal store. We've got t-shirts, hoodies, leggings, stickers, mugs, you name it, you might find it over there. So head on over to teespring.com/stores/paranormal-portal and you too can help fund the Paranormal Portal Podcast. Thank you so much for all that you do and thank you for being a part of our Paranormal Portal family. Everybody, and we're back at it here on the Paranormal Portal Podcast. Buckle up, we're going in. The next one is coming from Virginia again. It was late one night, and I felt like I could connect with a spirit. Sure, why not? What are you doing? I'm watching TV, but I think I'm going to connect with a spirit later. I just had a strange feeling, but I was ready for this to happen. I always felt that I could open up and be a medium. I just never really believed. And so I thought it was made up or something terrible would happen. And it must have been around midnight when I went upstairs to my bedroom and laid down on my bed. And I spoke out loud. I said, "I'm here. Come to me. I'm ready." I heard sounds like someone walking up my stairs, and then I felt paralyzed. I physically could not move. There was a loud, high-pitched scream in my right ear. I could not move, and then finally it was gone. I couldn't sleep that night. What happened? Another time when I was a little girl, about 4 years old, I was living in Miami, and I woke up from my bed and started to walk to my parents' bedroom, and I wanted to snuggle with them, and as I was walking down the hall, I saw that there was a party. And there must have been about 50 people, spirits or so, and they were eating at our dining room table, and it was buffet style in the Florida room. And these people were dressed like from a different era, maybe the 1940s. A lady dressed all in black with long black hair came to me. She knelt down and told me, "Shh, go back to bed." That happened 33 years ago, and I have never forgotten her. Who could she be, and why did she send me back to my room? Probably because you're a kid, and they didn't want kids at their spirit party. I don't know. Very strange. But cool. That's a very cool experience. If that is real, that is incredibly profound. I mean, that's like, okay, say if you're going to be an earthbound spirit, wouldn't it be cool if there was buffets and parties and stuff, you know, like all the earthbound spirits get together and have, you know, potlucks and stuff. I think that's awesome. All right. This one's coming out of, it's a Virginia night here, ladies and gentlemen. It's Virginia again. And these were all pulled up at random, so I had no idea, but several from Virginia. Hello, I'm 14 years old girl, and I believe that my house is haunted by someone or something. One day I was home alone downstairs on the computer, and I was just sitting there, and I heard someone knocking. I knew it couldn't be either of my pets because they were sitting right in front of me in plain view, sleeping. And I also went upstairs to see if someone was at the door, and nobody was. I was really freaked, but then it stopped, and it started again. Previous to this, at night, while I'm in bed, I can hear someone or something walk back and forth in my hallway. I know it's not my pets because my dog sleeps upstairs and my cat sleeps with me, and my cat is normally sitting with me when I hear it. And also, I will be home alone and be sitting on the couch upstairs reading, and something walks up and down the stairs. I repeatedly look over the mantle at the stairs, and I don't see anything. I've told my parents about this stuff, and they just seem to think I'm joking around, and they don't ever listen to what I'm saying. I've studied all sorts of paranormal activities, and I have come to the conclusion that my house may probably be haunted. I also watch all the haunted TV shows, and like most haunted and a haunting, and my mom thinks that it might be my imagination running wild, but I don't think so. So what do you think, and what should I do? Well, you know, this is written in 2007, so again, it's quite a while ago. I'm sure this person is an adult now and has probably got this dialed in, but here's one thing I would like to say, ladies and gentlemen. By watching television shows, you are only getting a really narrow, small snapshot of paranormal investigating. You are getting a little tiny picture of what is involved. You're not feeling the fear. You're not feeling the intense emotion that can be imbued in a place. There are places you walk into and they feel like you're in the bowels of hell. I don't know how to explain it other than you feel like you're in a soup of evil. And you know, you watch these shows and it's easy to chuckle when they run out, you know, being absolutely terrified and stuff. But when you're in those situations, when you're in a very terrifying situation, if you've never been in a haunting experience, you can't, you know, really imagine. You can't objectively understand what that feels like. But for the most part, most paranormal investigating is a lot of time and very little by way of proof. But when things do go off, they go off in an incredibly profound and energetic way. And watching television shows does not brace you for that. It does not prepare you for that. I think if you're interested in paranormal investigating, get tied up with a group that's doing it. Follow along, you know, go along on group investigations if you can, and get an understanding of what's involved. But, you know, that's the one part about the TV shows that does bother me, because people think, well, I watch Ghost Adventures all the time. I'm totally ready to investigate. It's like, no, you're really not. You're not ready to be absolutely terrified and go sit alone in a dark place when you feel like someone is breathing right down your neck and wants to eat your soul. I mean, you can't prepare for that kind of stuff. That's just something you got to get your, you know, feet on the ground for. So, you know, don't think that by virtue of watching television shows, you are prepared to paranormal investigate. Now, I don't think they're terrible if you take them for what they are. They do showcase a lot of times decent technique. They do talk about a lot of the equipment involved, a lot of the techniques they're using. And those things are very powerful and very, you know, good, because it gives you an idea of what will be happening if you do investigate, and even shows you some techniques or how-tos, how to conduct investigations on a very rudimentary level. But there's a lot more involved. It's, you know, it's a lot of work, a lot of time, and you know, definitely get involved with a local group if you have. And now there's paranormal groups everywhere. Just go on Facebook and look for groups in your area. You'll find some. Start tagging along on investigations, or, you know, helping to coordinate some investigations for them to go to, and perhaps you can go with by virtue of helping them, you know, get a location. So, but, you know, it's like watching Dr. Phil doesn't prepare you for being a counselor or a psychiatrist or a psychologist. It's just, you may get some understanding, you may get some ways of looking at things, but it's just a snapshot. It's not, you know, true training. So, just my two cents, but I think it's important to, you know, cast a true light on that. So the next one is coming out of Washington. We're now out of Virginia, ladies and gentlemen. We're moving over to Washington, which is right next door to me. You don't have to believe this, but it's true. I used to have a dog named Tasha who would never go through my kitchen without whining or shivering on the way to my parents' room. From that point on, I always thought there was a ghost in my house, which my parents call Casper. After my dog died, I must have been about 11 years old, and I was lying in my bed one night watching television, and it was around 1 o'clock in the morning, and I couldn't fall asleep. My mom had gone to bed hours before, and at that time of my childhood, I had always been scared of being alone at night, and I watched too many ghost movies. And my dad was going to be home in about an hour and a half, so I just laid in bed, waited, trying to calm myself down, and the thoughts of thoughts running through my head and the chills going down my spine. My door was slightly open, with the hall light shining into my wall, and I listened to my TV and watched the wall for no apparent reason, and minutes passed by, and the chills got stronger, and I ended up breaking out in a cold sweat. Out in the hall, a dark figure passed by. It looked like a man, around 6 feet tall. He seemed bald and really muscular, and he passed into the room next to me, making no sound as he went. But there seemed to be scratching on the walls above me, and the scratching stopped after a few seconds, and there was just silence. But the chills never went away. I knew that every door was locked and every window was shut, so there was no possible way it was an intruder. My eyes stayed peeled open until my dad unlocked the front door and turned on the TV. And even now, I'm still scared. Well, it's, it's one of those things, I think, you know, they're always potentially there. I mean, you're always potentially in the presence of something. And I think that, you know, that's probably, if you're already feeling afraid, and there are things around that feed on fear, then they're going to try to capitalize on that for whatever reason. And, you know, it's possible, but it's possible. It's also, you know, a kid's imagination. I mean, you know, kids believe, I mean, they can grab plastic pieces of material and create entire worlds with their imagination. So, I mean, these, you know, they can, they can create entire dramas and entire battles and entire, you know, kingdoms and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So the power of imagination is certainly powerful, and especially in a child. And they're already feeling helpless because they're small, and everything in the world seems huge. So, you know, to be incredibly imaginative and being magnified by feeling helpless, you know, certainly could generate some figments of your imagination. But, you know, I don't know. This could very well be a real thing. It could very well be a fanciful mind. I don't know. I hope the kid was okay. Again, it's an old story, so it's not like he's in impending danger anymore. I'm sure he's an adult now. Okay, everybody, I think it's time we got to take a break, so don't go away, and we'll be right back with more of the Paranormal Portal podcast in just a couple minutes. All right, everybody, and we're back, and we're back at it here on the Paranormal Portal podcast. Buckle up. We're going in. All right, the next one is coming from California. This is a real quick one. I just came home from a road trip and I was absolutely exhausted. So I went up on my bed and slept, and a few seconds later, I heard this buzzer noise. And I tried to go to sleep, but I heard it again. And after the third time, I heard a voice, and it said, "Stop making that noise." And right after that, I heard the noise, and then I opened my eyes, and I couldn't move. It wasn't like I tried to move. I was energyless. I just couldn't move. It felt very scary. I felt like there was this type of ghost holding me back with a weird kind of energy. The way that I couldn't move freaked me out a lot. I felt as if I was possessed and I couldn't control my actions. I was just still. I've never had this kind of experience before. I just need some help. I want to know what's going on and why. I've also had a lot of other ghostly presences in the house I moved in with my family, and every night I hear stuff fall or a soda can open, and I get really scared. I hear voices all the time. I've read some stories, and it's said that a demon might be trying to attack me. I'm Catholic, but I don't wear a cross, and I've always been told ghosts are never in a Christian or Catholic house. Really? Oh my God. That's amazing. I'm not trying to put this person down, but you know, where in the hell do you get that idea? My family has a statue of Mary, and my mom told me that no ghost can come into a house with Mary inside of the house. It's a beautiful thought, and again, the power of belief, I guess, is key for those kind of things, but I don't know. I don't know what to say to that one. It's like, far be it for me to say what is allowed or not allowed. I can't possibly know, but I think that that's an incredibly arrogant statement to decide that because you observe a Christian faith that somehow precludes anything from bothering you. I mean, things can still bother you, but it'll be your faith that'll get you through it and will perhaps keep you safe. I don't know. It's just the arrogance of a statement like that. It's like, really? So what is it like, you know, yard guard, raid yard guard? You just spray around your house some Christian and they can't come in? I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe that's true. But again, I don't know. Arizona's next, ladies and gentlemen. This is an experience that happened to me in 1993 at my dad's home. I was 8 months pregnant at the time with my oldest son, Christopher, and we were all about to eat dinner, and my brothers, my dad, my son's dad, and myself, we had dinner every night together, sitting in our usual chairs, and I was about to take a bite out of my taco when something bright caught my eye. Where I was sitting, I could see down the hallway real good. Well, it says really good, but I like real good. There, running from my brother's room, was an old man, probably in his 60s, jogging towards my room. He was wearing short blue jogging shorts, you know, the ones that have the white striping all around, no shirt, white sweatband on his head and around his wrists, and I could see right through him. I jumped up and started screaming. "Did you see that?" Of course, everyone thought I was losing it. Trying to explain what I saw, though, through my sobbing and crying, it all happened so fast, but it seemed like forever. That's how good I saw this man. As I was packing my bags, my brother came in and said he believed me and that he knew who this old man was and how he died. At the time, my brother was playing around with a Ouija board by himself, or usually with a couple of friends, and they would tell us stories of how people died and you can contact them by playing the game. My brother told me that the ghost's name was Hank, and he would always go jogging every morning at the same time, same place, like clockwork, until one day he was hit from behind and thrown into a ravine, where he lay there bleeding internally. His body was not found until 4 days later, after the hit and run, and he had no family and lived alone at the time of his death. And my brother finished his story, and I could not comprehend what he just told me. If this were true, or what, all I can say is I know what and who I saw, but don't know why it chose me to see it. I haven't seen it again, but my boys and I will never again sleep over at my dad's house. We just go and visit and leave. I can tell you, though, my dad's house is so haunted, so many different family members have heard, seen, or felt presences in this house. How they got there is beyond me. I just hope that whatever it is they want, they don't try to contact me. Now, by virtue of her being pregnant could be part of the reason why she experienced that. Pregnancy is basically a hormonal thunderstorm in a woman's body. And it can really wreak havoc. It can, you know, cause all kinds of changes and maybe permanent changes in the woman's body. And so it doesn't surprise me that her being pregnant, she was the one that observed it, because she's dealing with a lot of energy. I mean, pregnancy is bringing a life into the world. That is, there's pretty much nothing more profound that a person can do, in my opinion. It's really an amazing, miraculous thing. But at the same time, I'm sure it opens a lot of doorways in a person, just to increase that sensitivity and awareness. And, maybe by virtue of just being a pregnant mother, your senses are just hyper tuned to, be aware of the world around you, so much more than a normal person, and perhaps it's a biological imperative to be aware of the world around you, because you are vulnerable when you're pregnant. And so, I don't know, but that is really wild. I don't blame them, if that was really a tough experience for her. And seeing someone jogging topless through your house, I imagine that would be a little freaky. All right, so let's see what's next. This is California. This experience actually started 2 days before the actual event I'm going to relay to you. It actually starts the night I took the math placement test for college in January of 2006. Upon getting my results, I naturally called my mom and dad in Texas. I live with friends in California, and friends who I have come to regard as a surrogate family. So I refer to sisters when I biologically have none, and make a pointed difference between my Texas mom and dad, the biological ones, and my Cali mom and dad, just for reference, to give them the good news. They sounded upset when they answered the phone, but my Texas mom is a bit of a hypochondriac, and I figured she just thought of something else that could be wrong with her, so I didn't ask why they were upset. And I passed on my information, bathed in their congratulations, and got off the phone. And as I was getting off the phone, I heard my Texas dad in the background of the call say, "Do you want to tell her?" But by then, my mom was hanging up. Now, while I'd been in the testing center and all of the day beforehand, I'd felt awful, and I chalked it up to nerves and taking my first standardized test, the GED aside, since first grade. I was homeschooled from second grade on, and I felt better after passing, but during the entire next day, I felt sick again. Just knowing what I know now, I would call it sick with grief. But then I thought I was getting the flu, stomach cramps, nausea, headache, and depression. Before I go any further with my story, I feel I need to explain that I had just moved from my Texas parents' house in September of 2005, and I'd been back in December for a week to visit, and during that time, 10-year-old Smokey did not stray from my side. She slept on my bed and followed me everywhere. She'd always been a follow cat, but I knew something was different this time. I think we both knew that this visit would be the last time I would see her. I worked hard to try and be able to bring her with me, but the vet wouldn't give her clearance to fly, and at under 12 pounds and at her age, she was just too old and too small to fly. And there was no way I could drive with her. In her whole life, on top of everything else, she'd never left the little apartment I shared with my parents. I raised her from a tiny kitten in that house. The last night I was there during the visit, she slept on my bed right next to my head, and as I went to sleep, I was petting her, and I remember visiting or whispering, "I'll be back to visit soon. Don't you go anywhere, baby." And I knew she didn't want to. But what I found out almost exactly a month later. Fast forward to me back in California the day after my test at sunset, remembering my father's words and having been feeling crappy all day, I called my Texas mom again, and this time the first thing she asked was if I wanted to hear the bad news then or if I wanted to wait until after the weekend. It was a Friday night. The hair stood up on the back of my neck and I felt my face flush. Whatever she was about to tell me, it was the reason I had been sick for 2 days. The morning of the day of my test, Smokey had followed my mother into the bathroom with something hanging off of her back, and my parents were shocked and horrified to find that she had a prolapsed colon, which is basically when the last bit of your intestines turns inside out and comes out of you, and when you poop too hard. Smokey was too old and too small for the surgery, and it would have killed her, and my parents couldn't afford it anyway, so the afternoon while I was taking my test, they had her put to sleep after a day of sad goodbyes and cuddling. What gets me about this is they left her body at the SPCA for disposal. If they'd called me that morning, I would have wired them money to have her cremated and the ashes returned, but there's nothing I can do about my parents trying to shield me from the sad truth of my baby's death. I got off the phone in a daze and was sitting on the couch on our back porch in California. I think I was crying, and I didn't really break down until after I got off the phone. And my California mom came out of the back porch to throw something in the recycle bin and found me crying. I don't remember how I told her or my sister what had happened, but I know I did. I've completely lost the next hour. I don't remember anything. I think I was in shock. I know my California mom decided to make fudge to try to help me feel better, and my sister was sitting with me and holding me when I finally managed to stop crying. My sister invited me to go out front with her for some fresh air, and I nodded. We went out on the front porch, and I was miserable, obviously. I couldn't concentrate enough to talk, so I just was looking up at the stars while my sister rubbed my back and I tried to keep from crying again. I was so upset. What if Smokey thought I'd abandon her? What if she was mad at me for leaving? For not taking her with me? All I could think of were things I'd done wrong, and then suddenly, I saw it. It was the only shooting star that I have ever seen, and it seemed to fizzle out directly over our house. And as it shot toward me, I suddenly found myself flooded by memories of Smokey, so clear that it was as if I was watching a movie or on a screen in my mind, and I couldn't even see the front yard anymore. Just the memories. I saw her as a kitten, small enough to fit in my hand, the day she crawled up onto our porch following an outside cat we'd been feeding, and I saw the time she'd ripped all the garland off the Christmas tree and strung it around the house. And I saw so many scenes, and they were all blurred together and ended with that last night of her sleeping inches from my nose. To my sister, I'd stood frozen for only a few seconds, but I swear I'd relived the 10 years of my baby's life in those few seconds. And I remember I knew that the star had been Smokey coming home to me. She said goodbye, and somehow I knew that she wasn't mad at me for anything. To make more of a point, many times since that night, I've seen Smokey among our resident ghost cats. The star really was her. And she's home where she belongs, with me forever. To the stars, Smokey. To the stars. Yeah, it's tough. These beautiful little animals become just such a part of our soul, just so much of our heart. That's amazing. And yeah, I don't doubt for a minute what she experienced is exactly what she experienced. The last one for tonight comes out of New York. This is from New York. I've had a paranormal experiences since I was a very small child, and when I was 17, my family moved from Texas to New York. As it was still school time, my parents decided that I would stay with my elder sister to complete my school year before I moved with them into our new house. And nearly 30 years later, I can't say what their logic was to move me from Texas to a small New York village for 2 months and then 80 miles away to another small New York village, whatever it was. I was to stay with my sister, her husband, and two children. Her eldest, a girl of 9 or so, was on a school break and at some sort of camp, and so for the time being, I was to stay in her bedroom until they made room for me. The house was sunny, single floor, almost ranch style. It was odd in that many of the rooms had a small walled-off corner, with the walls maybe 3.5 feet high. No doorway, but a toilet and sink in this area. And there was a regular bathroom with a toilet, sink, tub, etc., and maybe 3 or so of these sort of toilets. Weird, I thought, but never really mentioned it. The house seemed like your standard 1960s, maybe basic house. Nothing spooky at all. Without much information on the house, I went to bed that night. The windows were at least 6 feet off the ground and a street light shone in. This sounds like some kind of a facility. I felt as though I wasn't alone, but put it down to the nerves, exhaustion, a long day, whatever. I climbed into the bed, lay down on my back, and pulled the covers up. And the sense, no sound, just a sense, that someone was near my bed made me open my eyes. I felt someone sit down next to my right hip, but I saw no one, but the blanket bunched up as though a weight was crunched it down. And then I felt a small adult-sized hand gently touch my upper chest, right by my throat. And then a cold hand patted my right cheek once, twice, 3 times. And the hand went away, and I felt and saw the edge of the blanket tug up a little further to my chin. I was frightened at the time and didn't sleep for a very long time, and when I did, it was peaceful, dreamless, and comfortable. The next morning, I asked casually if my sister knew the history of her house. "Oh, sure," she laughed. "Did Grandma tuck you in? She tucks Teresa in every night." Turns out that the house had been a barn. A loving son converted it to a home for his blind mother, which is why many of the rooms had the mini bathrooms. The old woman had died in the same room that I had slept in. I chose to sleep elsewhere after that. I wasn't particularly scared of her. I was just a twitchy 17-year-old twerp who wanted nothing and no one nearby. Typical adolescent behavior. I look back and laugh now, as there was nothing but love and comfort in that visit. That's really cool. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I think that wraps up our show for tonight. I hope you enjoyed the journey through the portal. But keep spreading the word, keep telling people about the portal, and keep carrying the candle for us. You guys are amazing. I thank you so much for spending the time with me tonight. I love you all. All right, guys, thank you so much for joining us here on tonight's show. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Please feel free to follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/paranormalportalradio, as well as finding us on Twitter. We're on Twitter at paranormalportal, P-O-R-T-L, and we'd love to have you stop by our YouTube page and subscribe and check out our shows there. We got hundreds of shows in our vault of journeys into the paranormal portal. So hope you'll check it out, guys. We're over there at youtube.com/paranormalportal. So hope to see you guys soon. We'll be back, of course, for more podcasts in the coming days. So stay tuned. But we love you all. Be good, be kind, be nice. Take care of each other. Help each other out. Find the magic in every day and remember to laugh as much as you can. Take care, everybody. Thank you.
sports betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Martin, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.